Man, I've got certain information, all right? Certain things have come to light, and, you know, given the nature of all this new shit, you know, this could be a lot more complex. I mean, it's not just, it might not be just such a simple, you know?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Four Thumbs Up. My name is Robin Koppel. Thank you so much for listening. I'm joined every week by my best bud, Bobby Bethke. What is up, dude?
What's up, Robin? Welcome back, everybody.
So this week is our first kind of regular scheduled programming week, and we're hoping to do one episode of a week that's a movie review, one episode that is kind of like a news rundown, just general topics of where we are and what's going on in the movie industry. So let's just dive in with our first story, a couple stories. It's kind of a gloom and doom type story
Things
about
are
box
great.
Office returns. Yeah, that happens every few weeks, it feels like, you know, a new headline about no one's going to the movies anymore. And, you know, but yeah. So first of all, 2017 U.S. ticket sales were the lowest in 25 years for the movie theaters. Which is,
Oof, that's bad.
You've kind of been hearing that all year.
That's
obviously
in raw dollars too, not right, not like adjusted for any year. So
oh
it's
yeah,
really
yeah.
bad.
Yeah, adjusted for inflation, man. Throws everything out of whack. But yeah, like, yeah, and to compound that, a story came out that said Dunkirk is the only movie in the top 25 top grossing films in 2017 that isn't a franchise, sequel, reboot thing, you know, and it's true story biopic. So literally there are no original stories anymore, which is unfortunate. So those two things together kind of, I don't know, we've seen this happening. Like, I forget who it was. Was it Cate Blanchett or someone?
Jodie Foster,
yeah. You know, you can't separate Cate Blanchett and Jodie Foster, and they're just the same person. But she did an interview where
she
gets
sued by both now.
Yeah, where she was like, "Beware of movie theaters going the way of the theme park, where they're all just big events and big rides, and it's not about the art anymore, man." You know, but it is a possibility. You know. All these franchises, and you know, we're complicit in it because we go to these movies and enjoy them, but it's becoming what the movies are for, basically. And you know, art house theaters, it's just a different thing entirely. Like, you almost feel like it's a different, not a different medium, but certainly a different like world of film to like go to, like see Call Me by Your Name at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday, you know, yeah. Or see
Hey man, I'll be at the Post in a couple hours.
Yeah, I actually am gonna go see Call Me by Your Name, I think, at 11 a.m. on a Sunday. Yeah. So it's, you know, we're playing both sides of the field here. but yeah, just it's weird, man.
I have blindly. If it were blindly pinning it on anyone, I want to blame Justice League and Kathleen Kennedy. Because shout out to Justice League for being a Justice League movie and only barely cracking $650 million worldwide.
Oh my gosh.
And it's currently at $226 million domestic, which is abysmal.
That's exactly what Force Awakens made in 3 days.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
That movie should have at least double the box office that it has. And then Star Wars, tons of people ran away from it when they heard it was bad. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you heard it from us. And I blame Kathleen Kennedy why it was disappointing. So yeah. She's the reason movies are dying.
Well, it's weird because it's one thing if all the movies are turning into reboots and sequels and stuff. It's another thing if those reboots and sequels are bad and people stop going to see them, and now we're left with bad reboots and sequels that no one are seeing, you know? Mm-hmm. like that's like three steps away from whatever golden age where we had artful movies every week, you know.
Dude, Pirates of the Caribbean made $800 million.
I feel like that was all overseas, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I wouldn't
yeah,
know,
about but... about 600. I'm looking at them right now. 622 of 794.
Are you serious?
Came from overseas. Oh, yeah.
My gosh.
Shout out to Wolf Warrior 2, ranking number 6 with 870 million, despite only 2.7 million of that coming from the U.S. So.
Dude, yeah. There's movies that like China literally makes and creates and makes successful just by seeing them a million times or whatever.
Nice.
And yeah, I'm not sure if that's what happened there, but yeah, there's like, it's weird, dude. There's more than just America out there.
I mean, looking down, I had the list pulled up, like I said, and looking up and down the list, it's like, they're not necessarily, they're like really good movies in there.
Yeah.
But Beauty and the Beast is number one with a massive amount
of
money. Dude,
just killing it, yeah.
But I mean, you've got like Homecoming and Ragnarok and Wonder Woman are all in the top 9. Those are all superhero movies, but they were all 3 of the best superhero movies.
Yeah. That's just what you hope, is that the movies are good, but they're still franchisey.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's no, I don't know how to, I mean, besides, well, how much did La La Land make last year? Because it was probably the biggest.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Original success. It was at 300 million, roughly.
Maybe, yeah, something like
which
that.
Which would place it around top 30 range.
That's nice, yeah.
But that's still pretty low.
Yeah. I mean, people, like, they, like, bemoan a time when, like, they're like, the most popular movie of the year was Forrest Gump or Rain Man or, you know, something like that. Like,
yeah.
A time when that was, like, and then, like, one Joel Schumacher Batman came out and went away.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, you know,
yeah.
It wasn't, like, so dominating the whole time, you know. But I don't know. I mean, the movies are still getting made. It's hard. You always want more money to go to the Call Me By Your Names of the world, you know, and for more people to see them, certainly.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, speaking of that, you pointed out that The Shape of Water is barely going to make any money. It's currently just made its budget back, basically, of
really?
$20 million. Yeah.
Wow. I don't mean to advocate for that movie to not be successful, but you know, I think I actually cut out my rant about The Shape of Water. Like, it never made it to air.
Really? Oh, no.
But we have recorded somewhere in the archives, me talking about how I have so little interest in seeing The Shape of Water by Guillermo del Toro. And I maintain that. I am not going to see that movie. But
I mean, see you at the Oscars.
And that's what hurts the most, is when it takes a freaking original screenplay or something so stupid. You know?
Yeah. But I mean, to be fair, it is one of the most original movies that has come out this year.
Really? I was actually just asking, but that sounded really funny.
Yeah, I mean, I would say so.
Yeah,
it's pretty, but it's pretty out there.
It's but it's like an allegory, and it's like a classic love story, and you know,
yeah, it's about a
fairy
fish.
Tale. It's about a fish man. Yep.
It's about a fish man.
Yep, played by Alabama Senator Doug Jones. That's just a great
huge shout out to Doug Jones.
Big ups, ups to Doug Jones. Okay. Okay, let's move on here to speaking of franchises. Netflix has announced, has basically cemented their first ever franchise with a sequel to David Ayer's Bright, starring Will Smith. Bobby saw this movie.
I did.
I saw the trailer.
We probably had the same takeaway.
Yeah, did not look
good.
The
movie is rough. Apparently. I mean, I read about it because I saw that Max Landis sold the script for, I think it's somewhere between $3 and $4 million, which is ridiculous. But apparently they changed his script, David Ayer did, and whatever he did made a bad movie. So I don't know why they keep giving David Ayer franchises.
Yeah.
But he's torpedoed one with Suicide Squad, which, well, actually not, because they're making another one.
Well, see, that's the thing. Both of these, Suicide Squad and Bright, have both been bad for the same reasons, probably.
Yeah.
But they both made money. And like, Netflix was like really proud of its numbers that so many people watched Bright when it came out. And that's why they greenlit a sequel, I'm pretty sure. Which is just such a shame, because I think me and Bobby have the same opinion that David Ayer isn't even that good at movies.
Dude, Bright has the exact same ridiculous use of music that Suicide Squad
did.
Are
you kidding me?
It's not as in your face, but it's still prevalent in there.
Wow.
Like, the whole time.
Because that the story goes that wasn't even a David Ayer thing. That was, like, you know, the trailer park editing recut of the movie. But he freaking needle drops, dude. That's crazy.
Yeah. My favorite factoid about Bright is that Will Smith was supposed to record the theme song, but then he, like, didn't have anything good, so he backed out.
Yeah, like, if you're gonna make your big Will Smith comeback, you gotta make sure it's for a good movie, first of all.
Yeah.
You know, because they already made the mistake of, like, the marketing for Suicide Squad was so intense, and, like, everyone was, like, you know, there were these stories about how the cast came together and, like, got matching tattoos and stuff, and you're like, that's all really cool, but if the movie ends up being bad, that is horrible. Like, yeah. You know, that's just, like, a waste, you know.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, and I mean, I'm assuming that if Netflix released their data, that Bright would be somewhere on the top 25 list.
Certainly for movies. Absolutely.
And that's just such a bummer, because it's already hit or miss, that the things that they move forward on, when those are bad as well, then it just compounds the issue. And I mean, to be fair, Netflix does make so much stuff that they do also make some really good movies.
Yeah.
But, which we'll get into in a later segment, since I watched a couple Netflix movies this week. But they don't have to make Bright 2. Like, it's, it wasn't, the first one wasn't good. It wasn't, I mean,
well, the other thing,
I don't know. I don't even have very many opinions about this movie, because it's just so bland.
Wow. Yeah. Well, the other thing is, it projects a lot of strength and, what's the word? Like, security for, like, shareholders and stuff. Like, it was a big risk.
That's true.
It was a big risk making this movie mm-hmm. in the first place. And to, like, back it up with, oh, we can greenlit a sequel comfortably, is, like, almost like security on the investment, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And just, it's all public image with them, you know? Like, they didn't want to cancel anything for, like, 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have just money to blow, so they could easily greenlit a slightly less expensive, pay Landis less, or no pay Landis at all, if I don't know who's going to write the sequel, but...
I mean, we also have to give props to them for... what is the budget for Scorsese's The Irishman? It's gigantic, isn't it?
Oh, it's massive, yeah, because they're paying the actors so much.
Yeah.
And they're also having to de-age all of them with technology. And
that movie's going to look so weird.
But, like, I'm just hoping that the technology gets to the place it needs to be just in time for it to not... Because, like, you know, in Ant-Man or whatever these movies, like...
Mm-hmm.
Captain America Civil War, there's a brief sequence where they de-age Robert Downey Jr. And it's like, I think it's just good enough, you know, for it to be okay.
Yeah.
Because The Irishman is like, if anyone knows, like, the whole Half-Life 3 thing, like, these nerds have been waiting for them to make this video game for, like, 30 years. It's not going to happen, you know. But it's like that for movies. Like, it's been promised and talked about for years, and it's actually happening now. You know, like, the expectations on that are so ridiculous. So I'm just hopeful that it works out, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if to get The Irishman and Mudbound and the Meyerowitz stories, we have to suffer through a Bright 2 every now and then, I guess that's worth it.
Yeah, and to get...
Which, I mean, honestly, I don't know if that's any different than before.
No, it's just the same as to get Bloodline and BoJack. You had to get Fuller House, and I've heard The Ranch is kind of good, but, you know, the same kind of...
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't account for taste, I guess.
And I mean...
And Adam Sandler movies.
And it's not like they... And I mean, Blade Runner 2049 is 33 on the list. And it's not, obviously... It's obviously a franchise. But I would also say it's one of the more original movies that came out last year.
Yeah.
And I mean, Warner Brothers and Sony probably paid for that with Homecoming and Wonder Woman. So, I mean...
That's true.
Just gotta. I feel like people are always overreacting to these box office numbers, because there's. I feel like there's, to a certain extent, a floor on how few people will go to the movies. I guess we've reached that though, so it's a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not quite. Like some of the January stuff that like really flops hard, like Hitman 4 or whatever, like those are those are kind of in danger, you know. Mm-hmm. But like even Blade Runner is going to be fine, thankfully. And
yeah, thank God.
Those numbers don't account for cost of advertising, but they also don't account for profits from merchandise and DVD sales or whatever. So like I've heard that you have to make double your budget to break even or something like that. I forget. Mm-hmm. But also yeah. I've heard that almost every movie, except for like embarrassing, spectacular flops, always basically make their money back and then some, you know, with mm-hmm. like with DVDs for 20 years and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's hard because Hollywood was in a really great place for a while, you know, like they were uncontested number one, and now like they're being attacked from like five different sides, you know.
It's these cell phones, man. These kids with these cell phones. Dude,
these dang millennials, man. They're not going to Applebee's and they're not
going to movies. Aren't millennials like 30?
Well, millennials can be 18 to 34 right now, something like that.
Jesus.
So it's like not, I don't know. I always like say it's 20-somethings right now, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but also like these kids coming out now, these Logan Paulers, they're like a different generation entirely. Like I think there's a network,
yeah,
the ABC Family rebranded to be Freeform or whatever.
They said
they were targeting quote becomers. That's the new generation, the becoming generation.
Is that really what their name is?
That's what it said in the press release when they were saying we are targeting becomers.
Oh man, that generation is so fucked. You can't live that down.
Maybe it'll change, because you know we have like a couple names, and we're technically Gen Z, aren't we? We're millennials, but we're also Gen Z.
Yeah. What is the? Yeah, this is completely off topic. What is the name for the generation that has never known a life without smartphones?
Oh.
That are like 10 years old or younger.
Terribly in danger.
Yeah. Screwed.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's definitely not that movie. So let's move on here.
Yeah, good call.
To continue this kind of like Netflix discussion, Netflix has signed director Matt Reeves and his production company to a multi-year deal, First Look, to produce films in-house at Netflix.
Nice.
Matt Reeves is the director of the upcoming Batman film, as well as the Planet of the Apes franchise, a couple movies there, and Cloverfield, back in the day, classic movie. Yeah. So this is good for Netflix, because this is like a prestige guy that can do franchises, and this is a guy you pick if you're gonna like get a talented guy to join your roster, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he's better than David Ayer.
That's for darn sure.
I think you said it well. Like he's pretty flexible on what types of movies he can make as far as scale. For however many pictures the deal was worth or the deal was for, they should be in good shape. I'm pretty excited about that. Though I have to say, I don't watching Netflix movies this week, even with like Chromecast and smart TVs and everything where you can watch it on a bigger screen, there's just something missing when the first time you see a movie is on a small screen like that.
Yeah.
That is just, I just still can't get over it, which is going to be such a bummer when The Irishman comes out, because I'm really looking forward to that movie, but I want to see it on my laptop, which is so lame.
That's, yeah, terrible, yeah. What you have to do is lay down and have your laptop, like, inches away from your face, so it looks like... That's actually what I do, though.
Really?
Yeah. I just have, like, I don't, like, put it on my knees and, like, sit up straight like a normal person. You know, that's way too far away. And poor, like, there's people we know that watch these stupid movies on their phones, and that's just unacceptable. No. Dude, unacceptable.
Bright deserves that.
Yeah, it does. But there's a great YouTube clip of David Lynch when the iPhone first came out, and people were talking about watching movies on your iPhone. And he's like, there is no way you can experience that film in the same way.
Yeah.
He's like,
no,
real.
I totally agree.
Yeah. Like, you will think you have experienced it or something. Like, you got to watch it. I'll put it in the description for this podcast. It's so good. But yeah, it's weird because the Noah Baumbach, who made the Meyerowitz stories, is like on record saying he's basically very disappointed that his, because he made a movie like Normal and it got bought at Cannes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And of course you want your movie to be bought, but then the people that bought your movie are going to be putting it on, you know, iPods.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it just is going to, and this kind of coincides with slipping ticket sales and more of these services where you can watch movies when they come out in your home. Mm-hmm. It's going to just, people have to get these tricked out home theater services, dude. Like, you know,
or just have a worse experience, which is going to discourage artists. So
dang,
go to the theater. Please
go to the theater.
Buy MoviePass, go to the movies. Please
buy MoviePass. They don't want you to buy MoviePass either, but do that
because yeah.
The poor theaters, dude, the poor film industry. I mean, they're fine. They're making billions, but it's also like, I feel bad. There's like five different major theme things they're having to fight right now, or thinking they have to fight at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, go to the movies. They're making all the theaters have recliners, which is very sweet of them. It's sad. Over the holidays, my dad tried to go see a movie, and it was like Murder on the Orient Express a month after it came out on December 20th or something. But it was like, we're sold out. We have all 30 recliners have seats in, you know, because like there's so much fewer seats now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with it, but it is like,
yeah, I do love the recliners.
Yeah, I'm never going back. Like, I have to go back occasionally, and it's like, oh, the other thing I did, I went to a theater for the first time in like months that didn't have reserved seating. Mm. And it was so stunningly different. Like, it took me back to all these times of like, someone comes in after the movie starts and is like, is the seat taken? It's like, that's a little interruption. And then you see people walk in, and they look up at their mm-hmm. options, and like they're so worried about getting a seat, and like, oh, they're late, and you know, there's no good seats, and all like that whole like experience of going to the movies that was basically taken away with reserve seating. That's like a huge
deal. You don't know what my theater is?
What?
No recliners, no reserve seating.
And Bobby gets there 45 minutes early.
I'm seeing a 10:30 showing, and I'm still trying to get to the theater at like 10:10.
Oh my gosh.
So that I can lock in my preferred seat.
Yeah. It's a thing, man.
I do appreciate it because I the thing I don't like about reserve seating is that this is so snobby, but for people like us who see many movies, we also care a little bit more about where we sit than other people.
Totally.
And it makes it harder to get the best seats. Especially with MoviePass, obviously, but
yeah,
at the same time,
yeah,
it's fine.
And it's like, whatever. I mean, it's not even a first world problem. It's like past that. It's like zero world problem.
Yeah.
But
it's not even a problem.
It's not even,
we're just babies.
No, yeah. But it's a thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on, more franchise news, the Warner Brothers Studios has set a new producer to helm their DC Cinematic Universe film slate. I think all the people there are still going to be there, like Jeff Johns and stuff, but it's the guy who kind of spearheaded the whole Conjuring movement, which is the most successful franchise that Warner Brothers has right now. They built a cinematic universe out of it against all odds, you know, and still did well.
Yeah, isn't their total budget like $80 million, and then they've made like, they cracked a billion, right? Something like that.
Yeah, something absurd.
I think I read that in an article somewhere.
Yeah,
that they just massive amounts of money for very little upfront.
Yeah, Walter Hamada is his name. Yeah,
yeah.
The model you have to go with is the Blumhouse model. Make a movie for pennies and have it just destroy. Like, you know.
It's a great model, too.
Like, why isn't everybody doing
foolproof
that?
Foolproof plan.
Like, And but it's so like he's the guy you have to study in this new age of whatever. You have to study Jason Blum because he did something to crack it. You know, his premises are sick, and he makes the movies for cheap, and they're still good movies. I mean, I guess that's the key to everything. But there, I mean, like, and The Conjuring, I think, kind of followed that model smartly. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if they're getting, I mean, their movies suck now. So I mean, if they're getting new people to come in and make different movies, I'm all for it. So
yeah,
great move by them.
I guess, yeah, but it's also we'll see. Like, but it's also he's not on paper qualified to do comic book movies.
Oh, they're also panicking. Yes.
Yeah, and it's the third new guy they brought in to do a DC thing in however long, you know. So it's kind of like, I don't know. He's the next. He's the last thing they knew it would be like a guaranteed, like a safe bet, I guess, to do this kind of stuff. But
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I feel like they're in too deep to really claw their way out of the mess they've made at this point.
Yeah.
So it's kind of more about just salvaging what you can.
That's so sad.
Which, I mean, maybe he can do, maybe he can't. At this point, I'm kind of in the mode of just waiting until the DC movie comes out and then checking it out rather than worrying about it for weeks and months leading up to it about all the rumors about how terrible it is, which will inevitably happen. But yeah, I mean, they got to do something different.
Yeah, I guess that, yeah. They need to find their Kevin Feige. But the problem is I thought they already found him with Geoff Johns. But he came on so late that probably didn't affect Justice League enough to like make a mark or whatever, but they already are panicking again. Like, they panicked too quickly, but also not quickly enough. It's so hard, but it's also bad. we've talked about them for hours at this point, so we'll leave it alone. But, you know, it just all we ever hope is that they actually make good movies and are successful, and, you know, however you have to do it.
Put Patty Jenkins in charge, please. Yes.
Well, I guess, yeah. Yeah, you know. Okay, so that's about all we have for the news this week. We have a couple little segments here that we thought would be interesting. So Bobby and I this year have decided to try. A couple of years ago, my New Year's resolution was to see 100 movies in a year, and I did it, and that was, like, super cool. And it was, like, it was kind of hard near the end. I was, like, pumping documentaries through my veins around New Year's, you know, but it was like, it was really cool. I saw 100 movies, and I kind of wanted to do that again this year. So this year I'm going for 101, and Bobby is joining me.
Yep.
And we're gonna keep you updated on everything we see on this podcast, which I'm sure will just be riveting content.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. I watched Batman v Superman 3 times this week.
Did you really?
God, no.
Because The thing is, I wouldn't put it past you, which is, but but it's Bobby has he saw so many movies last year, and he didn't even keep track of like rewatches or old movies. Like, he only
of new movies. No, I didn't have a dedicated viewing log last year. I just kept track of new releases, and I was up to 56, so pretty good.
56 new releases, so he would have shattered anything. Yeah, so this challenge basically exists to see how high Bobby can get, which leads us into our week one. It's January 7th. It's been a week into the new year. My grand total movies seen is one film.
Nice.
Which is, you'll hear a review of it this week. It's I, Tonya.
Yep.
Which was great. Spoilers for that review, but okay, so Bobby, stun the people with how many movies have you seen in 7 days?
Well, I was pretty lucky. I'm up to 7, so
that's a movie a day,
and Bob, I'm gonna see a couple more today.
So it's gonna be 9 in 7 days.
So 9 in 7 days, which is pretty good. I got a little lucky because on New Year's Day my local independent theater was doing my absolute favorite thing, which is re-releasing old movies on the big screen. So on New Year's Day, I went a hard 3 for 3, where I saw Casablanca, There Will Be Blood, and Mudbound when I went home that night, and on Netflix, which is also great. And then since then, I checked out the Meyerowitz stories, which was very good. I, Tanya, for our podcast, which will come out in a few days. Friday, I watched The Big Lebowski, which is one of my all-time favorites, which I actually, when I first saw it, I loved it so much because I thought it was hilarious. And I watched it all the time that I actually cut myself off for several years because I was ruining it for myself. So this is the first time I had seen it in a few years, and it was better than I remember.
Wow.
And then I was also really lucky last night to go see Blade Runner 2049, which was showing at my student film center.
For the fifth time in a year.
I've seen it five times in like 3 months now. Oh, and it's amazing every time.
Crazy, man.
So yeah, I'm up to seven. That's going to taper off a lot in the coming months. I'm not going to be watching a movie a day, but right. I am on a good pace,
yeah,
I will say.
That's what you have to do for these movie challenges. You have to scream out of the gate, just like, you know,
yeah,
get them,
because there's always going to be some random week in April where you just don't even open your computer or something.
Yeah. Oh, you don't leave your house. Yeah, totally. Especially because he goes to college, like, you know, and does work and stuff. It's really hard.
Yeah it sucks.
Yeah, and like, I've been busy this week, you know, I've been doing stuff, and it's hard to get, like, on a weekday, it's hard to get out there. And
it really is, yeah.
But
especially because there's one theater, I live in Chicago, there's one theater in downtown Chicago that I love going to, but it takes 50 minutes to get there, geez, taking public transportation. So I had a late night when I saw I, Tanya, but it was worth it. I, Tanya is great. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, I did too, yeah. But and even like that kind of situation is what sets you up perfectly to be like a Netflix film viewer. But I also, mm-hmm, like, another part of it is like, I need to like have the wherewithal and like kind of the, have the focus to like really zone in on a movie.
Focus. And, like, you must be focused.
And like pay attention to the cinematography or whatever, like the theme, you know, mm-hmm, just like give a movie your attention. And like, I'd rather just zone out to YouTube for an hour and fall asleep.
I will say I'm surprised that I've yet to see a bad movie this year.
You haven't seen it, and you're not going to, because the two movies you're going to see today are both Oscar contenders.
Yeah.
So he's made it nine in a row without a bad one.
Yeah, I was pretty, I was assumed that if I did make it to 101, at least 30 of those would just be hot trash. but yeah, I mean, there's so many good movies out there. I feel like there's not an excuse in watching a bad one, unless it's a new release that you just want to check out. But
yeah, or for the education of it, or if you guilty pleasure something, which...
Catch me at 50 Shades of Grey 3, February.
Yeah, dude, I have a hot... we're going to have to cut this one short, but I have a thing about... I've seen the 50 Shades Grey trailer at this point 20 times.
So many times.
Every like, they bought the ads for that thing...
For everything,
which is great, because no one knew about it before or whatever. But like, I've gotten to the point where I'm dissecting it so much that like I'm seeing these, like, each individual shot is so bad and like ineffective. Like, it's like I see what they're trying to do with that one shot. First of all, it's cut terribly, so I didn't notice any of this until the 10th viewing, because it doesn't draw your attention the way it should. But these shots are so, like, you see what they're trying to do. And you see how badly, how many ways they could have done it effectively and like cool in like a filmmaking way. And it's just so flat and bad. Like, I need to write a dissertation on how bad the trailer for the bad movie is. It's ridiculous. But okay, so the last thing I'm going to say is the Golden Globes we're recording this on Sunday, so they're tonight. You'll be hearing this Monday, so they will have already happened by now.
Hit him, Rob Dog.
So everyone has been making, over the years, people have been talking about, you know, this year the Golden Globes didn't nominate the right movie, or they nominated the stupid movie. Like, this year they nominated Get Out as a comedy or something, and people were up in arms about, you know, I saw solemn social media posts about, oh, this is so meaningful to the, like, it's important that they did that, this is wrong or whatever. The mistake people have been making with the Golden Globes is taking them seriously at as any level of worthwhile institution worth our respect or time at any level at all. These are the Golden Globes are the biggest garbage fire joke that anyone has ever like the coup.
Didn't Mahershala not win last year?
Something like that. Of course.
That's right. He lost to Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Dude, why not, dude? Because like I've stopped committing to memory all the egregious injustices in nominations and wins that have happened at this stupid dumb award show over the years. Because like they're so freaking stupid. They could also can easily objectively proven to be bought on a regular basis. Amazon bought like 5 Golden Globes last year. Like, you know that show with Gal Garcia Bernal where he's a composer and whatever, you know, it's like no one saw that show, but it was fine or whatever. It got best comedy of the year, dude. Are you kidding me? And this dumb business about splitting the nominations just for lead actor into comedy or musical. Or wait, no, they also do it for Best Picture, Best Comedy or Musical, or Best Drama, which leads to, like, there's one musical every 3 years, but it leads to junk like Mamma Mia being nominated for Best Picture. You know? And it's like, it's great when La La Land comes out or whatever, when you have a musical to nominate, but the rest of the time, it's a useless, stupid, it makes you, they nominated The Martian for a comedy, they nominated Get Out for a comedy, it's so freaking stupid. And they're dictated by this committee, the Hollywood Foreign Press, that's like shrouded in mystery, but not in a cool way. It's just because they're freaking weird. And like, no one knows what they want or why they're doing it. And it's so strange. Like, it's like, and like, these are the people that are dictating. Like people in culture care about the Golden Globes for some reason. I'm not sure how they pulled that off in the marketing 40 years ago to make, like, people on Twitter are going to watch the Golden Globes and be like, oh, that's such a shame. I can't believe. Do not give the Golden Globes the time of day, people. They are, like, I do not know. It's the worst. It's the worst. They're so, like, award shows in general are stupid and like they're not a good barometer of taste or objective quality, blah blah blah. But the Golden Globes, dude, are so horrendous.
Oh my god!
Like they haven't like every year. I've like stopped caring. I didn't read the nominations this year. They get the nominations wrong every single time. With like hilarious, like they didn't nominate The Big Sick this year, and people were upset about that. Of course they didn't, because why would they? Because they're idiots. They don't know what good movies are. Like, you know, just because that wasn't trending in whatever stupid European Hollywood circles that they're going through, you know, like it's just a lie. It's a ruse, and it just
it's a lie.
It's so bad, dude. And it's just a shame that people take it seriously.
I'm so excited.
It's not a barometer of taste or what movies are good, what shows are good, anything. If a movie wins a Golden Globe, good for it. You know, if I ever get nominated for a Golden Globe, I'm deleting this podcast. Yes, hello, Mr. Hollywood Foreign Press Man. I'm very thankful. Thank you for your contribution or whatever. You know. But yeah, people watch. So, and of course, all of this is to say, I will be watching tonight.
Yes, same.
At 7/6 Central or whatever. Seth Meyers is going to kill it because Seth Meyers is a champion. But do not worry about who wins and loses. Just point and laugh at these silly people.
And with that, we'll see you on Thursday.
We'll see. And the Oscars are the same way. Okay, guys, everybody. I mean, they're all part of the bigger, you know, whatever. Okay, so that's my rant. I'm done.
That was a great rant.
Thank you. I hope that got across everything I was trying to say. You know, just basically, don't worry about it. The Golden Globes are stupid, and they're bad, and they're wrong always because they're, you know. Okay, so
any device that mixes TV and movies is not worth listening to.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's fun to watch the program because all the people are in the same room and they're having fun, and also the actors on the floor, they know it's stupid. They don't care.
Oh, I bet they all just get hammered.
Yeah, that's apparently that's what they do. Yeah. Okay, so with that, we will call this one for the week. But thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Bob, for being awesome.
Yep.
That whole thing, like, you don't know when you're supposed to respond. Yeah, do that every time. But yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to you very soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that is our show, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Just some plug time here. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, and Patreon at Four Thumbs Pod to continue the conversation or support if you're so inclined. Questions, comments, constructive criticism, all welcome. Our theme song is Light by San Holo. Our logo was found on Google Images. You can find this podcast on iTunes, Spreaker, and YouTube. And please share that iTunes link if you share it with anybody. Thank you so much to our lovely podcast hosts, Spreaker.com. Thanks to Bobby for being awesome as always. And join us very soon for another conversation. Thanks, guys. Have a great one.